Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. Folks, it is now or never. I can always tell you how I can't emphasize that enough. And I just think all you have to do, if you're continuing to watch the news cycle, then that should be more than enough to give you the evidence necessary to prove that it's now or never. It's that simple. Now, if we have the luxury of a couple of years getting through this entire Biden administration, if we don't get him removed, it's going to be tough. They are planning on decimating and tearing apart our Constitution. They cannot get away with, as long as that Constitution exists, they cannot get away with moving us into the global government. They cannot get away with going down a path of eliminating our currency. That's tantamount to destroying our property. So you need to understand where we are and what they're doing. And you need to understand what they mean by some of the things they say. And this is why, and I only went over a few points. There's plenty of things. You need to pull in the Biden transcript so that you can actually see how he's making a lot of assumptions and assertions that are flat out unconstitutional. So, as we promised, we're going to get into getting organized. So before we do that, what we have to do is we have to academically lay a foundation for you, or we at least have to give you the empirical data and the evidence that we can prove and what we need to do and how we need to do it. I think I have dragged this dead carcass of putting aside your differences and putting aside your interests, whether that be individual or organizational. We have to put those things aside if we're going to succeed. The other part that is integral in success is that we have to be focused on standing and being centered on the Constitution. In other words, the only way you can do that is you have to understand. This is why definitizing the Constitution is so important. This is why I'm hoping I can actually get some assistance or help in bringing some think tanks and organizations together to definitize the Constitution. But they need to understand just how important this is, how important that work is, so that when we can hand these things to states and go, this is the Constitution, point blank. And what you're dealing with the federal government, you don't have to accept their definition, which actually should close the revolving door to the federal judiciary. And actually, we will be able to start shrinking the federal courts throughout the United States. And actually, we should be able to expand the Supreme Court and I'll just say this, I'm throwing this out here, and this is one of those things I would love to get into some serious debates over. But the paradigm that making lifetime appointments for judges, I think was a flawed paradigm. I think it's one thing if you actually have people in a class and culture that are so grounded on principles. But we don't have that today. We have people grounded on principles, but not in the way we want. They're ideological principles that they want to see things go a certain way, and they're willing to do what's necessary, as we've seen the court do. So I'm just throwing it out here that if we truly have a Republican form of government, well, obviously we see that in the executive, because the way the executive is chosen is through the Electoral College, which is an equal representation or a distribution of representation equally throughout the Republic. Yeah, there's the House is done by, as we understand, the House is done by the apportionment of population of the state. and then the Senate is equal. So we have these two separate houses, and we have the Electoral College. But when we really look at the president is not really, he's not the representative of the states, which is why the Electoral College getting one vote for every congressional, or I should say representative in the House of Representatives, then it means that he's really more, and that's one of the reasons why they call the White House the People's House, because he is the representative of the people in the principles of, you know, the way the Electoral College was laid out. Now, the judges or the judiciary, that has nothing to do with representation. It has nothing to do with a representation of paradigms or representation of the states or anything other than if you look at the court today and you look at who sits on the court and the types of degrees and education that they have, it's more of representation of the Ivy League paradigm. And I don't think that that's, I think the framers were wrong. I think that the best thing, and I'm just throwing it out here because I love stirring the pot, and I may be wrong on this, but you're going to have a hard time proving me wrong. I don't believe we should have nine judges because I believe that each state should be the ones that submit to the governor who should represent the state in the Supreme Court, which would mean we would have 50 justices sitting on the Supreme Court. So they should be able to dispatch cases because you can break the court down into, you know, these sub-courts, you know, to actually, you know, work through what they're going to accept and what they're going to, you know, how they're going to argue and bring in all the different arguments and then allow everybody, you know, in a week of clearing all the issues, they've already been briefed and they've gone through all of the details. And if there's any further questions before they actually make the decision. But the real thing is, and the reason why the Supreme Court shouldn't be permanent is because they shouldn't have that many cases. They're taking on cases they have no jurisdiction over. They've assumed jurisdiction over every aspect of our lives, and they can't do that. And this is where the states, if we had the states as the judiciary, the states would be very well aware of what the states should be dealing with and what the federal government should be dealing with. And so if we have a justice or we have a bunch of justices that are being rogue or what have you because they want to pull in jurisdiction to try to get away with that, it's very easy to get rid of them because the governor can then remove them via the impeachment process or via Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. Remember, Section 3 of the 14th Amendment applies to the judges. I try to impress this upon people, and it's really hard for them. Really? Start connecting the dots. So we can actually have more, I should say, the state should have far more control over what the judiciary is doing than them being able to sit in an ivory tower and actually try to get away with legislation and trying to get away with injecting their agenda and excuse me, and perverting the mores of this nation as they have been doing. They've been very successful at this, and it's time we stop it. So I'm just saying that it's the elephant in the room. Remember, leaders identify problems. I'm not necessarily giving you the absolute solution, but I believe that this is a start because if we are to have a Republican form of government, which is one representative of the Republic, and in this particular way, this is how we can do that to make sure that we don't have the Ivy League controlling this nation. Because if you understand the source of the Ivy League, when it became the Ivy League, that's when the communists took over and started controlling these schools. The Fabian Society moved into America in the 1880s, and the schools they targeted were Harvard. They actually penetrated and took control of the narrative, which is why people are just absolutely just disgusted with the crap these schools are teaching. You know, this critical race theory just didn't come, you know, from a seed that somebody just planted. this has been a part of a plan, and they've all been privy to. And why is it you think that these justices sitting in the Supreme Court today, even the three that President Trump picked, they seem to be, you know, chummy? Even though they may not completely align, they don't rock the boat. I think only Clarence Thomas. I think Clarence Thomas is the only rogue justice, because he's the only one that really calls things for what they really are. And he's, I know that I can't call them conservatives, but I've heard some people actually say disparaging comments regarding him, and it's obvious that they're not conservative or constitutional. But Clarence Thomas does his best in trying to make things constitutional and addressing things in that kind of context. But the problem, even with Scalia kind of got it, but Scalia didn't understand the Constitution in accordance with the ratification base. And this is why we have to get back to that. But we got into this whole problem because when new states came into the Union, the existing states didn't send out and provide them copies of these ratification debates so that everybody knew exactly how that Constitution was described. But anyway, I've gone into much longer of a monologue, but give it that thought. If you have problems or you want to chew on that, let me know. But what we're going to get into is the organization, and actually what we're going to get into is the organizations we got to be wary of, and we'll do all of that when we come right back. If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416. Okay, so as you know, this show is also sponsored by republicreview.org, and you're listening to the only show that gives you the academic evidence and academic evidence-based solutions. And I'm still waiting on Bob. I actually called Bob this weekend, and I didn't, he's still not ready. Apparently, they've had some technical difficulties, and they've kind of had to start over from scratch in setting up this huge seminar. And so we're believing, and we're kind of counting on this, this being a very large effort, a very large dial-in. So please join this. And, the reason why we need to get everybody to join this very first one, because if there are problems, so let's work it out now. Because I understand that when you create a strain on infrastructure, like Zoom, when all of a sudden everybody had to telecommute and they had to start having meetings and the use of Zoom went up, I started noticing the quality of Zoom was really questionable. And actually, that was before I really started doing and trying to do recordings with Zoom. And I can tell you, the quality of the recordings and the way Zoom's audio features at an application level and hardware level, they do not use compression. So in other words, it's a nightmare if you're trying to create, you know, recordings to share with people, because it's just way too dynamic and your volumes can never get right. Where Skype, by using compression, and there's other, you know, point-to-point media connections, or I should say, you know, virtual connections that you can use instead of Zoom. More importantly, why would you use Zoom? And I think they're not using Zoom; they're using something else. But they're setting something up, and so be patient. Get involved, listen in, and if we actually have the success in the first time, because it'll be a good test, we should be able to move forward in Bob holding these, I'll call them seminars, regarding the First Amendment right of petition. This is really important stuff. It's equally as important as as what Brent Allen Winters and other people are doing regarding the common law courts and common law grand juries. Now, with that, Gary Smith at Fortitude Financial Coaching, if you are ready to get disciplined in your spending and taking control of your finances, give them a call. Fortitude Financial Coaching. We have the link on the Reclaiming the Republic website. ConstitutionEducation.us. ConstitutionEducation.us. That's where you can go and be able to pull in and start sharing things that either you're learning or that you believe other people need to learn. If you're having meetings and you actually want to start helping people understand the Constitution, use some of these little courses and little briefs and so forth that Keith Broders has put up on this website. It's great material. We have some videos that are equally as good, but the point is that we need to start helping people understand the Constitution. Getting to fundamental basics and becoming literate on the supreme law of the land, it can't get more important than that. It's the same thing with, as we were talking about, definitizing the Constitution. TimberNation.com, if you're looking for quality hardwood furnishings. Custom quality hardwood furnishing. Stan Kluett will provide you protective covers for anything that you want to protect. And Add Local can be and should be your first choice in providing email services and other domain services and so forth. If you need help, if you need hosting, whatever, give them a call, addlocal.com. And so our comment line, as you know, 425-270-5416. Now, there are lots of groups that are out there creating assemblies, and there's these national assemblies to dial in and listen and get involved. There are groups like Tactical Civics to get you kind of involved. There is the Center for Self-Governance. I was just talking to somebody this weekend regarding the Center for Self-Governance. and the reason I'm bringing this up is because the founders are the two people that created this, and I think it started in Tennessee, was Mark Herr and Mark Meckler. Now, Mark Meckler moved off and basically stood up the Convention of States, but I believe they have, like, intellectual property and so forth. But there are all of these types of groups, either to train you and educate you on how to do activism and so forth. I think that's nice, but it doesn't solve anything. It basically lets you become your own voice. But let's think about that. For the most part, isn't the model right now everybody yelling what they want? And that's the problem. What we have to do is we have to understand what they can do, what they can't do, and then we have to unite on the principles that these are the things you can do. You can't do all these other things. And that makes it very succinct. And when we all agree, it becomes very concise and the message becomes very clear, because our public servants now don't hear a bunch of noise that everybody is just saying, this is what I want, this is what I want, instead of, this is what we demand. There's a big difference between what we demand and what I want. And so why would we get involved with these types of organizations that aren't really, they don't have skin in the game, and more importantly, they're charging you. It costs money to get involved, and it costs money to do the things and become a part of the structure. You know, like the convention states, I believe, you know, they ask for you to donate on a monthly basis. That's where they get their money from. This is why we actually are looking at just monetizing this messaging and monetizing this show, so that people can start listening, starting under the paint, understand that we're going to help fund you. And it's not about us, it's about you and your county. So it's important to understand the difference between creating a county that is actually yours, that you, the people, and your government. This should be a part of your government. So the transition of this unorganized militia should actually go from you know, getting funding from us to actually start setting up venues, to start setting and organizing, not paying people, but covering the cost of whatever your overhead is. We can't guarantee that we can cover everything, but isn't it nice to have some help? Isn't it nice to be able to, you know, at least get a little bit of help? And so if we can help you, that's exactly what we plan on doing. And so when it comes down to domain services, we're going to actually start throwing, I'll just say, accounts, so that you're not even paying for them until we transition you to actually becoming a entity. And what I mean by becoming an entity is your end goal for your county is to get your county government to actually fund and support the citizen vigilance in the county. If it is necessary to have jury duty, it is equally necessary to have citizens' vigilance holding government and the public servants accountable. Public servants don't like this, so they don't want to fund it. But when you get to a critical mass, in other words, when the majority of the people of the county say, this is what we've got to do, and we have to do this, then their hands are tied. They'll have to make the funds, you know, available, not to necessarily create, because this is all about volunteerism, by the way, folks. You know, I've been doing this volunteerism all this time, and we all need to be doing the spirit of volunteerism, because it's through sacrifice that we sanctify what needs to be done, and that's how we get blessed in getting those things done. But back to these organizations. What we don't want you to do is we don't want you to create anything that will create, I'll call it, scrutiny or raise eyebrows or raise concerns by government or anybody else. We have to be beyond reproach. We actually have to have organizations that are legitimate and within the boundaries, because technically the citizenry, that's the best way to say this. The active, vigilant citizenry is within the Constitution. And we'll get into that when we kind of get through this, I'll call it this professorial lecture here. And, you know, obviously I'm not the most professorial, but the point is that as you start looking at some of these organizations, there's organizations out there that are calling themselves committees of safety. If they're truly constitutional and legitimate, the first thing they'll do is they'll stop calling themselves, you know, these anything that they shouldn't be. Committees of safety, whatever the committee is, whatever the assembly is, it should be a militia. And when we talk militia, a militia is not only a force of defense, and it's not only people that pack guns. If you look at the forming of the militia in the Revolutionary War, how was it done? it was actually formed to actually start holding people accountable. It was the militia or the people, the citizenry, before they picked up arms, that started organizing. They started choosing people that were going to represent them, because at that point in time, Britain had stolen their government and basically dismissed all of their representatives. Now, it's not like they went out and really tried to beat the weeds for new representatives, because the new representatives were killed or were converted to, you know, brainwashed by Britain. That didn't happen. So most of these people, this is why George Washington was a consummate leader and a continual leader throughout the history of Virginia, George Mason, all of these people. In other words, those who were actually involved in government that were cast out, they were quickly involved in framing this new government for those people who had already trusted them. We'll be right back after these two promos.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, so these organizations out there, some of them are modeling them after what the framers used, and that there's very dangerous context to this. And so let me lay out the argument and why we don't want to go down the path of using those types of names. The name that has transitioned from the old to the, you know, the new to the current form of our constitutional republican form of government are militias, a citizen vigilance. And these are baked within the Constitution, whether they be formal militias or informal militias. An informal, unorganized militia is a militia of the people that are concerned about their government, not concerned about defenses, not concerned about fighting an enemy, but concerned about their government and taking a stand saying, you can't do this. Remember that before a shot was fired, before the Declaration of Independence, clearly, the framers and those people who were representing the good people of America pleaded, and as a matter of fact, read the Declaration of Independence. Thomas Jefferson calls out that they pleaded several times, and there was no response to the train of abuses that they were suffering. And so it became self-evident that they had to break away. But it wasn't because they didn't try the civil path first.
we are obligated to actually hold our public servants accountable in a civil manner. We are a civil society, and we actually have galvanized within the Constitution the precise processes and the rights, and these rights are protected for us to do these things. So this is why I bring up the Tory Acts, and this is why the Tory Acts are so important, because the Tory Acts is a snapshot of what was going on pre-Declaration of Independence, pre-Revolutionary War. The Tory Acts were acts that were actual communications from this newly formed Continental Congress, which promulgated these communications to what we would refer to as state shadow governments. Why? Well, because they were creating a government and a representation of people that had nothing to do with the monarch, right? Within these acts, these shadow governments were referred to as local representatives, as assemblies, conventions, and or committees or councils of safety. This was the forming of, literally, a new republican form of government, moving away from the established monarchy. Consequently, each of these states, as they were formally forming a union and severing their ties and associations to Britain, they made these huge leaps. You should notice the initial call in the Tory, in these Tory acts, where they were basically calling upon people to arrest or identify those who were arranging. As a matter of fact, I don't even want to, let me pull it up, because I don't want to try to, what do you call that? You know, paraphrase. I think it's really important that everybody hears exactly the words, because then I'm not, you know, people saying, oh, well, shoot, GR is, you know, aggrandizing, or he's putting, you know, words in, you know, that don't belong, or speaking out of context. This is what the very first Tory Act, October 6th, 1775. And I think this is right around that time the shot heard around the world, right? Because prior to that, the people already started waking up. They already started trying to hold people accountable, and they already started making pleas to Britain. Resolved, this is what it says, resolved that it can be recommended to the several provincial, and here's the names, they're talking to these governments, these provincial assemblies or conventions and councils or committees of safety. So, in other words, each state was a little bit different, and each state was organized a little bit different, but they kind of encapsulated those different forms of local representation of the people. So anyway, resolved that it be recommended to the several provincial assemblies or conventions and councils or committees of safety, which is what a lot of people are calling these new groups now, committees of safety, to arrest and secure every person in their respective colonies whose going at large may, in their opinion, endanger the safety of the colony or the liberties of America. Now, just think. We actually have an election system, and as corrupt as our politicians are, these seats, as I have emphasized, our county commissioners, our state legislators, the governor, they may not be functioning the proper constitutional roles, responsibilities, and powers. And we have to hold them accountable. And we have mechanisms to doing that. And we've talked about the First Amendment petition and the power of doing this. But more importantly, we have to get the people involved. We have to get enough people in each county to actually create the pressure in forcing people to behave. It is my supposition that in a dark red county, you only probably need 10% of the people to show up to actually get active. Because when you see that kind of percentage, so if it, let's say your county's 50,000 people, you have 5,000 people show up at the county commissioner's meeting and demanding their First Amendment right, and or the sheriff, and demanding that the sheriff start arresting these commissioners for stopping your constitutional rights of petitioning and holding them accountable. This is a government of the people. And so at the local level, this is the essence of this. And by taking back your local government, you now have the ability to start jumping into controlling your state and controlling your federal representatives. If we get enough of these red states to do this, then we actually will be able to take over enough of the red states to move Republic Review the way it needs to move. We actually, it's nice to get one state to do this. And the reason why I am very focused on Wyoming and getting Wyoming to do this is because if we have Wyoming take a stand, if we get David, one state called David, we call Wyoming David or whatever the first state that stands up, could be South Dakota. It could be your state. But it becomes the David that stands up against Goliath. And as soon as one person stands up against Goliath, we have this second man principle stand. And if we got that second man principle to stand quickly, because we're already kind of preparing all these states that they need to do this, so that when David stands up, they go, you know what, we got to do this too, and they quickly jump up. It helps the other states, one, notice, get involved, and jump up as well. Your success in getting everybody to rise to the occasion goes up exponentially when you get two states to stand up quickly, or that second state stands up quickly. And when I say quickly, I'm not talking about hours, because obviously it would take a day or two, a week. It should not take a year. It should not, it may be a month. But if you actually, if you look at the way it transpired with Jefferson and Madison, Jefferson did it October 24th. The resolutions were written October 24th. It wasn't until November 10th where the state legislature promulgated, accepted and promulgated those resolutions of Thomas Jefferson. So it took almost 2 months for Virginia to respond in kind. So, you know, we can't have expectations that we need this to happen in a week. It would be great. Don't get me wrong. It would be awesome to see two states standing up and then three states and four states. But I haven't said this yet, everybody recognizes how desperate things are, and West Virginia just crossed the line in basically abandoning their constitutional principles by petitioning for a constitutional convention. We have 18 states now, so they're past halfway. They're one state past. So now all they need is 17 more states. Or no, my bad, 16. So As they accumulate more states, and I'm going to tell you, there's no doubt in my mind, Mark Meckler is focused on the, you know, who are the next most susceptible states to crossing the line. And he'll get close, he'll get into the 20s, but he won't get to 34. Because those 34 states, if he gets to 34 with blue states, then you can tell that this is actually a controlled opposition, and this is a move for them to actually discard the Constitution. In other words, he's a shill for an agenda that, you know, is beyond even what people are accusing these evil things, you know, these some of the evil things that they're accusing him of. But anyway, let me go back to, you know, these Tory acts. Clearly, they're talking about arresting, but they didn't have the authority. They created a government, but it wasn't truly a government of the people. And why do we know this? Because when you read the next Tory Act, which was January 2nd, October 6, 1775, then January 2nd, 1776, in this next Tory Act, this is where they kind of back off and say, okay, don't arrest, because these states were pushing back saying, hey, do you realize if we come out and assert that they can't do this and that we're going to arrest them, then we highlight ourselves, because we can't control the Britain is already controlling government. They're controlling the jail system and you know, however elaborate that was. It wasn't that elaborate back in those days, but it was still, you know, there were still real limitations of what they could do. And they would put themselves in jeopardy by doing it if they went down that path. So they kind of push back, says, we can't do that. So they kind of change their tune and says, okay, well, keep note of these loyalists, because if we get into this and we win this, we're getting rid of them. They didn't actually say that in these Tory acts, but that's what they alluded to, and that's exactly what happened at the end of the war. They got rid of all of these loyalists. They kicked them out, as I've told you time and time again. We'll be right back after this.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so without reading the entire couple of pages of the Tory Act, suffice it to say they started out the gate going, arrest these people. And then they realized, you know, we're kind of going to we'll be losing our most valuable people because these are the people that are committed to the cause. We haven't gotten everybody on board yet. And most everybody knows, and historians have come right out and said, that the Revolutionary War was really only supported by maybe 7% and actively supported by possibly 3% of those inhabitants. It took a while. And the reason it took a while is because people needed to see the tyranny of the brute force of tyranny. You know, they were seeing the taxes, just like we see today. Just like we've seen this insidiousness. Most people think that they quickly stepped up. Now, we're seeing resistance, and we know about the Sons of Liberty and the Tea Party and these types of things. There were organized resistance of groups that were actually, you know, dumping the tea, that type of thing. But the point is that it wasn't the majority of the people that were actually standing up in resistance. It wasn't this huge unified effort. It became more and more unified as the war raged on. Why? Because people were seeing for themselves how Britain was destroying their properties. They went through their fields or took their stuff to help themselves. And either you helped them and got on board with them, or they would treat you like a prisoner of war or a second-class citizen. And so as more and more people were seeing the brute reality, this unvarnished truth of Britain's tyranny, it brought them on board, but it didn't mean that they had the resources or the ability to support. Many points in time, they had problems even staffing the army because these guys were farmers. They had to go home and plant their crops. If they didn't go home and plant their crops, they wouldn't have food as an army. So, you know, they actually had to sustain themselves in such a way. So that's why it took so long. We didn't have peace. I don't think the Paris Treaty wasn't until 1783. 1775 is when the conflict, you know, the shooting and the firing and so forth of weapons occurred, right? But it took 7 years.
And back in those days, when you didn't have the daily distractions of everything else in a busy life, and you were stuck in the middle of a problem, I don't know if you've ever had that, where you can't break away from a problem, it becomes really overwhelming. And I can imagine how more and more people started converting and so forth. But let's look at what's going on today, folks. We actually have Americans, insurgents, going and committing Bolshevik revolution and actually insurrections in the streets of our cities across this nation. We actually have the enemy within. Instead of Britain sending forces, they've actually developed and nurtured the ranks right underneath our nose through our education system and all of these government programs. You see, you, the taxpayers, are paying for this revolution. And this is why we have to get organized. This is why we have to shut down any type of efforts within our own county if Bolsheviks come, or if worse, other people come to try to seize our liberties and seize control. So anyway, as we started looking at this, each of the states were actually formally forming a union, but they hadn't done it officially to where, you know, they were listing a registry out there, you know, contact your representative online or posting it, because it would give Britain, you know, all the information they needed to go find these people, arrest them, and hang them. These people were committing treason to Britain. You should notice the initial call, again, was to only arrest those who were endangering the liberties of America. And again, as I said, due to the circumstances at hand, these assemblies, conventions, and committees of councils of safety pushed back because they felt that it would endanger them as to functioning as a shadow government. So the message changed. And so as they started moving forward, they actually started, you know, working more underground, taking notes and being diligent in identifying who their threat was. As the war really began, and actually as the conflict went on and on, these county/state government operatives had to work a narrative. And as a matter of fact, some of the Tory acts were providing a narrative, kind of like propaganda, in talking about and putting things into context that, you know, here, we're just trying to live a life of peace and liberty instead of, you know, getting people instigated. You have to win their hearts over first to say, hey, we're the good guys here. Because, you know, if these, and a lot of these people were illiterate, right? They didn't have formal education. They didn't need it to base, you know, they've already learned everything from their parents of how to make furniture, it's not that they weren't smart, and it's not that they weren't capable of doing a lot of things. It was just that they didn't have the time and the money and resources to get formal education. So anyway, as these people, as the majority of the people started witnessing all of this, you know, this propaganda narrative was out there to help them understand and to help teach them about the principles of liberty. That's why a lot of the narrative was really focused on that, so that people could put things into context. Now, I know most of this history, and you know most of this history as well as the facts. The point, in fact, is that these assemblies, conventions, and committees of council or safety evolved from a confederacy union government into a hybrid constitutional government. In other words, what I'm saying is, as they started getting ready to react to Britain, and then as they created the Articles of Confederation, and then as they evolved from the Articles of Confederation, actually, I think there was the Articles of Association, Articles of Confederation, so they basically made some changes of how they were to function together, but each state was really autonomous, and each state had some very uniquenesses. They didn't have bicameral legislation and so forth. So how they were governing each of themselves was uniquely different, but how they were coming together was starting to bring them together at the state level as well. And so the point I'm making is that these governments were evolving. And so what we used as committees of safety, by the time the Articles of Confederation came in and by the time the Revolutionary War was done, we established our state governments with state legislatures, reestablished state legislatures, state governors, and so forth. So they kind of restored the state governments. And then as they went from the Articles of Confederation into the Constitution, this is the important part. Every single state, once the federal Constitution was adopted, every state changed their form of government and modeled it like the federal government. Every state then changed and created a Senate for representing the county and the House of Representatives for representing the people of the county in the like manner of the states. And so as they made these changes, I want you to understand, they made constitutional changes and constitutional framework of how government was to be organized, and they did it. So whether you like it or not, your representatives at your county, your representatives at your state are legitimate seats of government. And to call them anything but legitimate is borderline treason, or at least seditious, because they, even though they may be corrupt and even though they may be in violation of the Constitution with what they're doing, the seats themselves are legitimate. Even though the way they've taken control of the voting, and the question is, do they have the ability, does the state have the constitutional authority to dictate how elections are to go? Actually, whether you like it or not, they do. Now, the point is that it has to be representative, and it can't be corrupt. The problem is, it is corrupt, and the second problem is, it's really not representative. There's way too many red states, because Washington was a red state, and there were way too many people that were bamboozled into believing that mail-in ballots was a legitimate election process. And so what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to actually prove to you that when you hear people talk about illegitimate government, they're wrong. There may be facades and facets that have been created that are illegitimate, but the government itself, these actual seats, the attorney general, the secretary of state, the governor, and your senators and legislators, your sheriff, your county commissioners or supervisors or parish commissioners or supervisors, whatever, those are your legitimate government. They may be doing things that is illegitimate, but don't confuse the two. Now, these people have a choice to either follow the Constitution or do what they're told and do as they've been doing for years. To be clear, this is why we have to start educating and holding them accountable. The only way we win in taking this back is first we have to understand what they can do, and then tell them you can't do these things that you have no authority to do, and you can only do these things that are within your power. By doing this, by having these conversations, by going down this path, this is how we start holding them accountable. And so this is why, as you start to understand what we don't want to do and why we have to do it a certain way, is so important. This is why it's taken 3 days just to get over the basics, and we still have a few more to cover. Anyway, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing.